Today I'm going to report on a joint work with Henrike Burstein and Eckhard Meinrenken. And it's about some kind of generalized geometry. I think there was already a talk by Marco Gualtieri, who probably introduced some notions. So, but I'll start from the basic definitions. Wait, oh, this one doesn't move, right? So then I have to temporarily. Right. Yeah, maybe I should copy it here. All right. Okay, so we'll denote by M a smooth manifold, and one of the ideas of this generalized geometry is to replace the tangent bundle, or try to replace the tangent bundle by the direct sum of the tangent and cotangent bundles. So in this way, instead of vector fields, we got linear combinations of vector fields and one-forms as sections of this extended tangent bundle. So perhaps it's good in advance to introduce, to have a special name for a projection from this direct sum to TM. Sometimes it's called the anchor map, so we're going to denote it by rho. An interesting feature of this extended tangent bundle is the fact that it has a canonical fiberwise scalar product on it, so you don't need any metric, you don't need any external any choices to introduce a scalar product on the fibers. For instance, if we have a vector and a covector, say u plus alpha, u will be a vector and alpha a covector, we can define a scalar product with another section, another vector plus another covector, as alpha of v plus beta of u, where this is just appearing between vectors and covectors. So once we have a scalar product, what we can naturally do, we can associate to this vector bundle a bundle of Clifford algebras corresponding to this space, and which is defined by this scalar product. Let me just here briefly recall that if we have x and y in the fiber CMM, then in the Clifford algebra, we postulate that xy plus yx is given to the, is equal to the scalar product of x and y. So that's the defining relation of the Clifford algebra. Now, we know from the ordinary geometry that Clifford algebras like to act on Clifford modules. And here there is a very nice Clifford module, which is simply the space of differential forms on M. So differential forms. So the Clifford action is given by the following formula. So now suppose we have psi, a differential form, and u plus alpha, this will be a section of TM, so a vector field plus a covector, then the action of this section on the differential form is simply given by a contraction with a vector field plus exterior product with a one form. So that's going to be the Clifford action. All right. So now a definition. So we're going to call a differential form an element of omega of M, a pure spinner. So that justifies, at least these are some words which appear in the title of the talk. So if the following two conditions are satisfied, so the first condition is that this form is non-vanishing. So for all m, for all points of m, the value of psi m is not equal to zero. And then the second condition is as follows. It's slightly more complicated. So we're going to look at the dimension. At each point of the manifold, we're going to look at the dimension of the following subspace of the of TMM, of this extended tangent fiber. So, and this will be sums of vectors and covectors, so sections or just vectors in TMM, such that the Clifford action of U plus alpha on psi M gives zero. So we're going to impose a condition on the dimension of this subspace. And I'm going to discuss this subspace in a second in a bit more detail. So we want this dimension to be equal to the dimension of M. Perhaps first a couple of remarks and then some examples. So one remark is that, in fact, two implies one. So you see, if the dimension of this kernel, of this space which annihilates psi m is equal to dimension of m, then we already see that psi m is non-zero, because if psi m were equal to zero, here we would have twice the dimension of m. So in principle, this condition is superfluous. So the second point, forget for a second about those pure spinors. So we can always introduce such a subspace, n psi m. And for any differential form which is non-vanishing, n psi m is an isotropic subspace of TMM. So what does it mean, isotropic? So this is a little bit, this word is used analogously to the symplectic category. So so this means that if we have two elements, two vectors, x and y in n psi m, then their scalar product with respect to this natural scalar product is equal to zero. In fact, perhaps, I don't know, in every talk one should prove something, so one should choose some small thing and prove it. Maybe that's a good thing that I can prove. So you see, what we can do, we can multiply this number by the form psi m, by the value of the form at m. And now we can use this relation in the Clifford algebra. So it's actually xy plus yx and all these acting on psi m. Maybe we can rewrite it in a bit more detail. It is x acting on y acting on psi m minus y acting on x acting on psi m. But now recall that x and y, these are vectors in this space. Right. But in fact, in the end, it won't matter. But you're right. You're right. Right. But in the end, you see these are elements of this subspace which kills psi m. So in fact, y, which acts on psi m, and x, which acts on psi m, that's all zero. So this is zero. And since we assume that psi m is non-zero, then this number has to be equal to zero. So xy is zero. Okay. So perhaps one more remark. So this condition that the dimension of n psi m is equal to the dimension of m, this is actually the maximum possible dimension for an isotropic subspace. So this is a half of the dimension of our fiber. So this means that n psi m is maximal isotropic. In fact, sometimes I'm going to use a different word, which will be justified a bit later. So maximal isotropic sometimes is the same as almost Dirac. So this is also an analogy to symplectic language, or to complex geometry, where we have complex and almost complex structures. So this will be later almost Dirac. Okay, perhaps some examples. Well, I only give some elementary examples because there will be more complicated examples, which is more or less the main topic of the talk. So we can choose psi equal to 1 or just to a constant, and then n psi will be simply equal to Tm, because these are contractions which kill this constant differential form. Or the opposite choice would be to choose some volume form on M as psi, assuming that M is orientable, and in this case we'll have N psi as T star of M, because in this case all exterior multiplications will kill the volume form because of the dimensional reasons. Finally, perhaps one more example. Let's choose omega to be a 2-form on M, and let psi to be exponential. Let me see, I was hesitant about the choice. I think in the end I want it to be exponential of minus omega. So in this case, let me denote the corresponding kernel by n omega, so it's actually n of psi omega. So it consists of vector fields and all vectors and covectors, such that the covector, and now what about the sign? Right. The covector is simply equal to a contraction of the 2-form with this vector. Right. So perhaps one proposition before we go to more interesting notions of Dirac structures and introduce a notion of integrability in this. Oh, okay. Thank you. Right. So. Proposition. Yeah, I haven't thought about this problem, so there are kind of three blocks that don't move. Right. Okay. So suppose we have two pure spinners, phi and psi. So correspondingly, we have two. Wow. So we have two almost Dirac subbundles, N phi and N psi. And so the statement is that they're transverse to each other. If and only if the following is true. So we consider a wedge product of these differential forms, and here I'll say what does it mean, phi transpose, in 1 second, and take a top degree part of it. And we demand it not to be non-zero, so this should be volume form. So the transversality of these two subbundles, which are defined by two pure spinners, phi and psi, that's the same as this formula. So this combination of these two pure spinners producing a volume form. And maybe I should say what is this phi t. So assuming that phi is a wedge product, say dx1 through dxk, then phi t is just a transposition in the most naive sense, I just reverse the order of the differentials. So it's just some sign factor. And then we extend it by linearity to arbitrary differential forms. Perhaps one very simple example, we can take this Dirac subbundle, or this subbundle is one of our subbundles, and then as the other one, we can simply take this one and psi equal to Tm. So this proposition says that n omega is transverse to the tangent bundle if and only if the following combination is non-vanishing. So we have to take exponential of minus omega transpose, and we should take a wedge product with the pure spinor which defines Tm, but this is just one, right? And then take a top degree part. And here, if I'm not mistaken, this transposition for a two form, this would simply change the sign, because you have dx dy, and then transpose is dy dx, which introduces exactly the minus sign. So this is the top degree part of exponential of omega. And this is non-zero if and only if omega is non-degenerate. Right. Okay. So one more definition which makes all this story. So up to now, this is just simple-minded definitions related to the kind of Clifford algebra story of this generalized tangent space. Now a definition which is a little bit more sophisticated. So in order to write this definition, we're going to choose a closed three form, let's call it eta, on M. So it's closed under the Durand differential, and in different subjects it goes under different names. So some of those names are the twisting or flux. I think there are some other names, depending where you are, more to the physics or more to the mathematics. So we fix this closed three form once and for all, and we say that the pure spinor psi is integrable if there is a section x of the generalized tangent bundle. So this means there is a vector field and a one form such that the following equation is satisfied. So the Durand differential plus exterior multiplication by eta applied to psi is equal to the Clifford action of x on psi. So if this is satisfied, then the subbundle and psi in Tm is called the Dirac structure. I must say that here I present it as a definition, but Dirac structures were known independently long before the application of the pure spinor to this formalism. And in a more consistent presentation, instead of a definition, there is a theorem which is due to Marco Gualtieri. So, but kind of for the purposes of the presentation, I kind of streamline it more like into a definition of integrability. Okay. So perhaps just one remark and some examples. Of course, at the moment there is not much of a motivation for this definition, and I must admit that I won't give you much of a motivation in this talk. But it's an important notion, and one corollary is as follows. Just to relate it a little bit to more conventional geometry. So suppose that psi is an integrable pure spinner. So then this sub-bundle N psi of the generalized tangent bundle is a Dirac structure. And then what we can do the following. We can consider the image under the row map of this sub-bundle in the tangent space Tm. So this is... So that's in general, that's not going to be a sub-bundle, but it's going to be a distribution. Sorry, yeah. N psi. Thanks. Right. And so this distribution is an integrable generalized distribution. Okay. So that's one corollary of this definition. So it would lead then to some kind of leaves that integrate this distribution at least locally. So this at least potentially leads to some interesting conventional geometry, not only to generalized geometry. In fact, in what follows, I'm going to concentrate on trying to solve this equation because, right, whatever the corollaries of this definition, then one should be able to produce some solutions of this equation. And I think what Marco was talking about in his presentation, there are approaches how to solve this equation in low dimensions. So suppose that we have a low dimensional manifold, then we can try to see what are possible solutions of such equations are, maybe by gluing or by considering charts. And I will consider an opposite situation when we have a lot of symmetry. So I will choose my manifold to be a Lie group, and I will see whether in this situation with a lot of symmetry, there is, which can be of very high dimension, whether one can construct some solutions of this equation. So this will be one of the results that I want to present today. Okay, now maybe just one example, but let's see. Now, okay, so let's do the following compromise. Okay. So just one example. So let's choose eta equal to zero, and let's consider this pure spinner defined by a two form. So psi is equal to exponential of minus omega. So then we can compute the Durand differential of it, and this is computed as an ordinary derivative of the exponential. So this is minus d Durand omega times exponential of minus omega. So we're supposed to represent it in this form, so there might be some right-hand side. But actually, it's easy to check that in this case, no right-hand side is possible. So the only possibility actually is that it's equal to zero. So there is no x. And then, since exponential of omega is an invertible differential form, we can now multiply by exponential of omega, and we see that this integrability condition simply tells us that omega is a closed two-form. So in fact, this means that L omega is presymplectic. Right. So before I pass to this Lie group example, I want to do one more piece of preparation. So basically, what I'm going to show you today is one way to solve this equation on Lie groups, and then an application of it to so-called group-valued moment maps. So for this application to group-valued moment maps, I need one more construction. And this construction is as follows. Suppose I have a map between two manifolds, let's say phi. And over each of those manifolds, I have those expanded tangent bundles, Tm and Tn. Now the question is, how can I lift, or what should I do with this map phi for those extended tangent spaces? It's a bit confusing, because in fact we know that for vector fields, I should use the push-forward map, whereas for the one-forms, I should use the pullback. So now how, what does one do with it? So the idea is actually as follows. And in fact, in each presentation, at some point, one should start cheating, right? I mean, one cannot go on so honestly all the time. Then it does not converge. It's a known theorem. So I think at this point, I kind of tell you that at this point, I'm going to start cheating a little bit. So suppose that we have a subbundle E in Tm and another subbundle F and Tn. And they're maximal isotropic. So now, in fact, it turns out that you can, in this picture, you can both push forward and pull back. So if you have something here, so E is a maximal isotropic subbundle here, you can try to push forward it. And the definition is the natural one. What will be the push forward? So this will be elements, say, V plus beta in Tn, such that the following is true. So V will be phi star of some U, and phi star beta will be, say, alpha, where U plus alpha is a section of E. Let's say we do it all at some point N. So here we have a point M, and 5M is equal to N. Right? So these are basically the formulas, the only formulas that you can write. And then the other way around. Suppose we have something maximal isotropic on this side. So we can also try to pull it back. And this will be the set of U plus alphas, such that the same formulas are true. So phi star U is equal to V, and alpha is equal to phi star beta. Note that I changed the left-hand side and the right-hand side, but the formulas remain the same. But now V plus beta is an element of F. So one can push forward and one can pull back. Now a small proposition. About those push forward and pull backs. So assume that we have E1 in Tm, and it is maximal isotropic, and assume that it is defined. Right. Assume that it is defined by pure spinor. Let's call it phi. So then we can push it forward. And we get another maximal isotropic subbundle. And we're going to call it, assume that it works like that. So it's a maximal isotropic subbundle in Tn. And assume that there is an F2, which is also maximal isotropic subbundle of Tn again, and F2 is transverse to E2. So you see there will be four sub-bundles in total. There will be E1, E2, F1, and F2. At the moment, I have E1, which is on M. It pushes forward to E2, which is on M. And there is a transverse maximal isotropic sub-bundle, F2, also on N. And I also assume that F2 is defined by some pure spinner. Let's call it psi. So these are assumptions. They look somewhat complicated, but that's what I'm going to use, I hope, if it comes to it in the last 5 minutes of the talk. What is the conclusion? The conclusion is as follows. F1, will be defined as a pullback image of F2, coincides with the subspace generated by the pullback of our pure spinner psi, and F1 is transverse to E1, which means, by the previous proposition, which means that phi transpose veg phi star psi top is a volume form. So basically, this is some kind of way of at least one application, and that's the one that I'm gonna use in the end. That's some way of inducing the volume forms once you have this picture. So we'll see how it plays in the end. At the moment, we can forget these two blackboards, and now we just continue with the search of solutions of this equation, but in a particular situation of Lie groups. So for a moment, forget about this story. Okay, so... So I'm going to make a choice from now on. M will be equal to G, Lie group, let's say connected. Perhaps at the end it will be even simply connected, but we can wait with that. So I'll denote by G its Lie algebra. And I will assume that this Lie algebra carries an invariant scalar product, which takes values in our base field, which will be either R or C, depending on the situation. So this is an invariant scalar product. In fact, once you have a Lie algebra with an invariant scalar product, you can do, so there are several canonical constructions associated to it. And one construction, quite famously, gives you an element in the third exterior power of the dual space to the Lie algebra. So this adder computed on X, Y, and Z is simply equal to B applied to the bracket of X and Y and then paired with Z. In fact, the very same construction, and I'll denote the corresponding element by the same letter, gives you a three form on the group, which is invariant both under the left and right translations. That's just by identifying this space with the fiber of the exterior power of the cotangent bundle. In fact, this three form is closed, and it's called the Kirtan's reform. So some years ago, Armand Borel came to Geneva and gave a kind of historic talk about the development of algebraic topology. And in fact, he was saying that that this example, that was one of the motivating examples for Durham when he was constructing his theory of differential forms. So this example was known before the omega appeared on the stage. Perhaps one more piece of information that we can extract from this scalar product. So we have an element eta in wedge 3 of G star, and we can identify it with wedge 3 of G, because G and G star is the same thing by virtue of this scalar product. And now what we can do, we can use the Chevalier isomorphism between the exterior algebra and the Clifford algebra. Now we have the scalar product on our space G, so let's send this element to the Clifford algebra. In this way, we obtain a canonical element in the Clifford algebra of the filtration degree 3. So let me call it by a different letter, let's say Q, because you see I already abused notations once. Maybe I shouldn't do it for the second time. Right. So these are things that we can, at least at first sight, extract from the this scalar product. So now I'm going to explain how one can solve this equation on the group. Of course, in some sense, the idea is that on the group, one should try to restrict all the calculations to one point, right, by the virtue of symmetry. It's not as straightforward as that, but basically you will see that it's almost restricting all the calculations to one point. So I'll give non-trivial solutions to this equation by starting from basically from some finite dimensional construction. So the elements of the construction are as follows. So we build a bundle isomorphism between this generalized tangent bundle to G, which is Tg plus T star G, and a bundle with fiber, a direct sum of two corpus of G. So I should say that since here we have a scalar product, we should better have a scalar product here as well. And we choose it to be a difference of two corpus of the scalar product we have on the Lie algebra. So let me call this isomorphism sigma. Well, I was kind of a little bit hesitant whether I should give you a formula for this isomorphism or not. And, you know, in the end, I decided to do it. Right. So what does it do? So it maps the constant section x0 to the left invariant vector field corresponding to x, the element of the Lie algebra, plus 1/2 the pairing of the left invariant Maurer-Constant form, let's call it theta L, paired with x. And then now it's easy to guess, say up to signs, what happens with an element in the second copy of G. So in fact, it is mapped to minus the right invariant vector field corresponding to the same element plus 1/2 theta R. So that's the bundle isomorphism together with the scalar product between these two bundles. So now we decided that associated to this bundle, there is a bundle of Clifford algebras, and those Clifford algebras, they act on the Clifford module, which is given by the differential forms. Now, associated to this bundle, there is also a bundle of Clifford algebras. But now this is just a product of G times Clif of G plus G. Well, it also acts on a Clifford module. Let's say, well, I can just put here a Clifford module for this Clifford algebra, but there is one particularly nice realization of a Clifford module for Clif of G plus G. You see, just take the Clifford algebra of G itself. So then one copy here can act on the left, And then another copy here, connect on the right. And so it gives you a nice structure of a Clifford module. So let's choose, for instance, this structure. So then, in fact, we know that all those Clifford modules, they're isomorphic. So we construct an explicit isomorphism between these Clifford modules. And in particular, we can restrict this isomorphism to constant sections here. So let's take elements or sections of this trivial bundle which don't depend on the base point. So this will give us a map R from the Clifford algebra to the forms on G. And in fact, now using this map, we'll construct solutions, in fact, many solutions, one can say, of this equation. So how does it work? Perhaps here I should just state a theorem. Okay. So a theorem. Suppose that F a subspace in G plus G is maximal isotropic. So recall that here we have a scalar product which is B1 minus B2, so we can look for maximal isotropic subspaces. So let's choose AS, an element in the Clifford algebra, which is in the kernel of the Clifford action of the elements of S here on this Clifford module. In fact, once you choose a maximal isotropic subspace, this kernel is just one line, right? So this is isomorphic to K, whatever it is, R or C or whatever you choose. And so we just choose any non-vanishing element in this line. So this is sitting inside of the Clifford algebra of G. So then R of AS, let's call it psi S, is a pure spinor. And if we assume in addition that S is a Lissab algebra, so then psi S is integrable. So basically, here I reduced solving this differential equation on the group. Of course, I don't claim it gives all solutions, but it gives a nice resource of rather non-trivial solutions, because this map R, well, one can't say it's difficult, but I even don't try to write it on the blackboard. And it's associated to some relatively, okay, one also can't say very simple, but the objects that we can understand, these are maximal isotropic subalgebras in G plus G. So perhaps a couple of examples of how it can examples of how this can work. Well, one example is like that. We can choose S to be the diagonal subalgebra, just the diagonal embedding of G into the direct sum of G plus G. So this is clearly a subalgebra, and it's easy to check that this is isotropic. So then, as a corresponding AS, we can simply choose one, because like the action of X on the left is multiplication on the left by plus x, and on the right, multiplication on the right by minus x. It turns out that you have to flip the sign at some point. So then, just a constant, that's a kind of element of Clef G, which is annihilated by this subalgebra. And then we obtain a pure spinor, let me call it phi. So that's one pure spinor on G. If you kind of introduce a formula for R, this will be some huge expression, but for us, I think it's better to keep it as R of 1. So another possibility is to choose an antidiagonal embedding, x minus x. So in general, this is not a Lisp of algebra. This means that the corresponding element, so let's say AS, we can just choose as a volume element on G mapped to the Clifford algebra, and then the corresponding pure spinor, let me call it psi. So this is just a pure spinor, but it's not integrable. In fact, not integrable. This means that if you write this equation, there will be no x which would make the right-hand side equal to the left-hand side. But still, it does satisfy some differential equation. It's just more complicated. So I don't think I would like to write it now. And then maybe the third example. Suppose that G is complex, semi-simple for a moment. So in this case, we can choose S to be a direct sum. Let's introduce some triangular decomposition like M plus H and minus in our complex semi-simple Lie algebra. And let's take a direct sum of N plus of the first copy and minus of the second copy. And then let's take here X minus X for X in the Cartan subalgebra. So in fact, this is a Lie algebra which shows up in quantum groups or in Poisson Lie groups. So if you've seen those notions, then this pair of complementary Lie subalgebras inside G plus G plays a very important role. That's a kind of induces a standard Lie bialgebra structure on G. So here AS would be something more complicated. I don't want to write it now. And then maybe I denote by psi hat the corresponding pure spinor on G. So so you see, one can invent many more subalgebras, and this would give many more different solutions to this concrete differential equation. Perhaps I want to spend the last 10 minutes by applying this machinery to something which is called group-valued moment maps. So, sure. That's probably a question that I have to answer. Right. So, suppose that. Suppose we have an integrable pure spinor. So suppose that S is a Lie subalgebra. So and let's assume that S integrates. So let's say S integrates to a closed subgroup in G cross G. So then G cross G acts on omega G, and then S acts on omega G. So this will be symmetry of the corresponding pure spinor. So for instance, if you take this one, then it's going to be invariant under conjugations, because that's the diagonal action here, it's an action of by conjugations. If you take this one, then this will be what is called the dressing action. So there will be N plus acting by, say, left multiplications on the left, and minus action by multiplications on the right, and there will be some kind of weird action of H by multiplication on the left and on the right at the same time. Right. So that's the point. Those pure spinners, they are not really invariant under the left action or under the right action. So that's why perhaps I do present this material here, right? If I would just say that, okay, we take a left invariant one, restrict this equation to the group unit and solve it, I don't think it would be worth giving a talk or writing a paper about it. Yeah, so that's we have a more complicated invariant structure. Okay. So perhaps an application of it, well, I'm not quite sure whether there is a chalk for an application. Thanks. So group valued moment maps or group valued Hamiltonian spaces. So the idea is as follows. So similar to this picture, we have a map from some manifold M into the group G. So in addition, we assume that there is a two form on M. M has a G action, and the map is equivalent with respect to this G action on M and the action of G on itself by conjugations. So we assume that omega is invariant under this G action, and yeah, and then we have this picture, Tm and Tg. So, So this is, now, those group valued moment maps, they've been introduced about 10 years ago with a number of axioms. And now, at least with this machinery, there is an elegant way to present those axioms. So one simply says that the push forward of the Dirac structure or of the maximal isotropic subbundle defined by omega is equal to the is equal to this Dirac structure defined by the pure spin of phi. So that's simply the definition. So this is a group valued space if there is this the push forward of n omega is equal to n phi. Now we can try to use this proposition here to obtain a volume form on M, because that's one of the interesting or mysterious features which those group valued spaces used to have. It turns out that those two forms omega are not necessarily non-degenerate. So, but then nevertheless, there are nice volumes forms on them. And so long ago, we wrote formulas for those volume forms, but we didn't really understand why those formulas are there or how they work. So now there is a possibility to understand this construction. And indeed, depending on whether our Lie group is general or semi-simple, we can choose either psi or psi hat as a complementary subspace. This would lead to a complementary maximal isotropic subbundle. And this would nicely fit into into this picture. So we can produce a volume form by this formula that we fortunately saved on this blackboard. So the corollary of this proposition is the following. So exponential of minus omega transpose vetch the fullback of psi, or actually if they're semi-simple, we can also choose psi hat. So these are volume forms. So these are volume forms on M. So I recall that actually we can replace exponential of minus omega transpose just by exponential of omega. So we can forget this sign. Perhaps one practical application, and I think this will take the last minute of the talk. One practical example. Suppose we choose some element of G and we let M to be the conjugacy class associated to this element. So then there is a unique two form on M such that the natural embedding of M to G defines a group value structure. So this construction implies that all those conjugacy classes carry canonical volume forms. And I guess for a semi-simple Lie group and a semi-simple element, that's relatively obvious. But already if you think of perhaps of an unipotent element, then probably it's less obvious. And if you think of an arbitrary Lie group with a pseudo-Riemannian metric, then okay, I don't know, probably there must be some other ways in Lie theory to see it, but at least that's some concrete manifestation of how this machinery works. I don't think. I'm not sure. No, I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I think maybe I should say. Yeah. As I promised in the beginning. Right. Yeah. Maybe the last thing I want to say, just to write it here. So. Right. In fact, it is also interesting to look at this expression. Say, for instance, in a semi-simple case, exponential of omega phi star psi hat, it's interesting to see. So this is, we know that the top degree part of it is a volume form, but we can also ask from the cohomological perspective, in what kind of cohomology does this object live, and also what kind of cohomology on the group we are pullbacking here. So these are very interesting questions, and we have some kind of partial answers to them, which also look intriguing. So this would be one kind of not really kind of open direction where one can probably make some progress.
Integrability of two spindles depend on eta. Because you somehow fixed eta, but it doesn't seem to
Oh. Oh, well, yeah, now, it was important that I chose this eta to be the Cartan's free form. Because I didn't really show you the construction, but you see this Clifford algebra, so the three form was defined by the scalar product. And also all these Clifford calculus were also defined by the scalar product. So, of course, that's a very special case of solving this equation. Perhaps...
It is integrability relative to eta.
That's right.
Different eta, it might be not integrable.
Yes, so that's right. This equation might fail if you choose eta in this equation, then, well... If it satisfied for one eta, the chances are, or in most cases, it wouldn't satisfy it for other etas. So then one... Right.
Is there any chance of group connection or analog?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know the answer, but at least in all those calculations, this is a similar structure which is used in quantum groups which shows up, meaning that we should take a Lie algebra with an invariant scalar product, and we should polarize it. So sometimes we polarize it into a direct sum of two maximal isotropic subalgebras, or otherwise into one maximal isotropic subalgebra and a maximal isotropic complement, like in the theory of quasi-Lie bialgebras. So, well, of course, it looks very suggestive. The only difficulty that I see is that after that, we put it into the fiber of this bundle and change the parity, which means that that eventually all those splittings they happen on the odd version, on this quadratic Lie algebra. So then I don't know, right? Good questions would let's say there are like classical R matrices or classical dynamical R matrices which show up in this context, but whether one can materialize quantum R matrices. That I don't know, and that's essentially, I would say, the main question for me is what to do with the odd parity. Well, so I.